Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, July 31st, 2012, and this is our 155 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor and return to Maui with their flowing dialogue. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello, well, welcome back. That last recording where you spoke about losing your father-in-law through that term death, that was real moving for me because I learned about things about death I've never heard before. And it was, one thing, it was just learning that it was a new journey and a new beginning of going. It's like a new phase of our the lives of our brains. And it's, it seems like our bodies carry our brains around, and it's our brain's life support system. Which it is, and it's got these eyes and hands, and you can take your brains many places just by walking. Or so we have this life on this planet, and we all never want it to end, but what you told last week was about your father-in-law was very moving for me. It was learning about a journey that it was a new beginning of a different journey. And it was but I had to mention it. And once again, sorry you lost your dad and your wife's dad. But we all listened, and thank you very much for sharing such a close thing with all of us.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not you got a misinterpretation of the concept of what we carry around with us. The body mechanism in our brain are just that, they're biologic, but we possess a soul. We also possess a mind essentially tied in with consciousness. And the dissociation of soul, mind, consciousness can leave the body in a state of, or a catatonic state, catatonia. In that state, the brain is essentially not being used or instructed. Much like how we use, in a simple sense, our computers, so our brain. Just remember that. Our higher abilities extend past the use of our own mind or our own brain, and extend past the use of our mind's ability to use that brain. We are able to interface physically with our own technologies that improve the ability of our own brain. Our brain is limited in its ability of recall, let's say mathematical functions, ability to store information and perceive. We take those and use our own devices, which have improved our interface with this world and with others. And in this revolution that we are in right now, called the information age, there's going to be more and more exchange of information. But the higher level, the dimensionally higher level of expanding our consciousness beyond our body is something that has been worked with by many of our different philosophers, as well as priests, you might say, or even people who just practice the ability to move past their physical limitations and extend out and touch first the higher mind, who gives us the ability to touch other individuals in the universe of sentient beings. This capability is something that pretty much is shut down for most people on the in our planet. And it's something that brings to mind your comment. You associate consciousness with the brain, but that's not it at all. The brain is a vehicle or a tool that our consciousness is able to use and expand into. When the brain ceases to function, or the body ceases to function along with the brain, consciousness persists. It consists. It lives on. But it can dissipate in its ability to remain conscious, sentient, if it isn't connected with the rest of the universe. And this is the story of how and why I was given the opportunity to understand higher purpose of life, the dimensions beyond our life, with people who are just as physical as we are, and others who are higher than us, and then purely spiritual individuals, beings of spirit and light, you know, having a light body, you might say, having a body composed of light, spirit, and yet being able to interface with me as a physical, biologic being. So move away from that thought of our brain being the mechanism of our consciousness, because it is not.
Well, that's amazing, because that's what we've always thought. Our brain is active and can make our hands move and make us think, oh, move your hand. Well, we always think of our brain as just that kind of consciousness that...
Right. And when I did share mind with one of the guardians, elders, you might say, and to feel his head, I was able to extend my control into his body by his permission and control his hand and receive his tactile information, which gave me the impression or understanding that he was truly physical, that he had a skull, that he had a texture of his flesh, his head, you might say, that is similar to ours. This is very, very dynamic. It was the most dynamic of all revelations in mind sharing, in being able to extend our consciousness beyond. I did this with his help, and it is the same ones. These are the Sharuns, or the ones who are classified elders or guardians of destiny. You might give them a nicer title like that. But they are real and have that capability. In fact, they function trying to give us guidance through the higher mind. But we must try to tune in. Yeah. And they want us to know they're we're around. But the world as it functions presently cannot and does not want us to interact with the higher mind, because it kind of would disturb the projects that they have been implementing all this time.
I'm sorry, implementing with us?
implementing a program of enslavement that has been originally conceived by Lucifer, a deceptive program that essentially cut us off from the higher truth and left us with a level of understanding that was going to become limited through just being cut off from the higher mind. In its place, he labeled that as simply being the higher mind, being the Father, the first source and center, as a reality. He labeled that as a totally fictitious idea, just a simple idea, not a real and present reality that we interface with. So when he did that, that whole program and everything else has been to stop that interface. Because essentially we rise up from the base biologic and life form here on planet Earth to rise up and interface with the higher mind and thus create an entirely new and wonderful order of being. But without that interface, we remain close to the animal. So don't think that we are given higher abilities simply because we have a brain.
We're sorry there. Michael had a phone call, and then I just went back 15 seconds and erased that. So where the phone rang, it's Michael will try and pick it up from there. But you were talking about the brain and saying that I was not correct in my thinking, which is fine with me. I just like to hear what you have to say.
Yeah, we tend to give the brain a little bit too much credit for setting us apart from the animal level, or just because of its size or something like that, simply because of size. But it's not that. There's so many animals in this world, you know, that have equivalent or larger brains. An example would be, of course, the elephant, the whale, dolphins, that do. And they're processing information differently. Yes, our brain is a fabulous machine. But if you were to limit our brain only to be a fabulous machine, it wouldn't explain the consciousness move that we are able to make through the soul, the plane of the soul, which is engaged between ourselves and the higher mind. The higher mind is one of the most important places. I previously stated, the higher mind is really the first source and center, but it is not the first source. It's not God. It is given our function to the higher plane, the higher realm of governance of the universe, of knowledge in the universe, of inspiration in the universe, and communication with others who also dwell in this higher mind and plane. And the gift of that has been given a name in the Yerancha book, the Thought Adjuster. But it is also a function that is spiritual in its energy and its ability to transcend space and time beyond the measure of the velocities that we tend to measure space and time with. It would be light, the speed of light. So When I remember having this interface and being able to actually extend my consciousness beyond the measure of my body, was it just my brain that was able to control the higher, to control the hand of the celestial that offered me a way of touching his head that I wasn't permitted to touch directly. And he allowed me to use his hand. And from that, I got all the tactile information I needed, as well as being able to move his hand exactly where I wanted it. And then he terminated that session. But he allowed it to happen to teach me more than just the tactile information, but to perceive and to understand that sharing of our brain. So extending that, you know, that interface of our mind into our brain can actually extend beyond our brain to another brain, which is shared, and allowed me to use his mechanism, his body mechanism, to check it out. And this is an important factor, because there are stories about demon possession and things like that, and that have some relevance in how some of these other entities try to perhaps control us from their perspective or from their mind. And only if we like that celestial who allowed me to use his hand and feel his head with his hand, make that kind of very similar cooperative invite, will such a thing usually happen, or possibly happen. Without that, it's very, very difficult, and takes a lot of brain weakening or spirit weakening process. People call that brainwashing or something like that. Essentially, to disengage us with the control of our spiritual selves, working with our own brain mechanism. Mm-hmm. So that's something that you might say that information really comes down because of an experiential relationship that I had with the celestial at that time. Of course, he imputes much knowledge. The Dano teaches in some ways like that, not just ordinary classroom teaching or teaching by demonstration or by showing, but having the ability to know when you need to gain a concept and how the concept can be fully embraced, not only by mind, but by our spirit and understanding. So the teachings of Dano's high teachers extend beyond the limits of our ability as normal teachers here on earth, teaching, you know, as a teacher, teaching another a student in an ordered way. They use a higher mind plane. Once we become more and more attuned to it, we receive even more and more teaching, more and more understanding. And much like how any inspiration comes, it takes a while. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't just happen automatically. It takes certain attunements.
Well, we've learned a lot from listening, and I guess we're further along than we were in the very beginning. But you mentioned dolphins and whales have a larger brain than us, and then you also said that they process information differently. How could you tell us what you were referring to?
Yeah, because their brain, although you take it apart and you look at it, it looks different than our brain. It's mapped differently. The physical structures are different. But they live in a world of acoustics, and their visual, perception of their world is tied in tremendously with, you know, a acoustic or a radar-like structure in which they can actually see with sound. So a large portion of our brain is used in our visual ability to take from light waves, that type of radar. Not necessarily radar, but we're still looking at reflected light waves. Mm-hmm. They map the sound in their mind, and then they can map like looking at a scene. What we would measure in our you know, basic radar in the most primitive sense would be how far it is away, you know. But what they're able to do with the sophistication of their mind is see that not only how far it, you know, let's say they were seeing a sunken ship, a shipwreck, but they would not only see the blob that the shipwreck is, but they are able to see that it's made out of steel and it's hollow and it's got fish in front of it and it's got, you know, it's a whole scene, much like how we would see, you know. So that's because of the power of their mind. It's equipment in relating to the environment that they're in. And that specialty is something that is built into their mind mapping. But do they have interface to the higher mind? Do they have that ability to have interlaced with the higher mind? They have perhaps a way of mapping to a realm of reality that would be more instinctual versus one that extends itself beyond the realities that we know. So they have tremendously powerful minds, but to do things very differently in terms of how they see their environment. You know, like I said, it's shared, like the dolphin would be able to share visually as well as acoustically, and so the whale. But then there are others that will have ways of looking at, like the elephant perhaps. The elephant has a real-time map, maybe like a GIS, not graphical, but a geological interface, or GIS system, like a kind of a memory, very much like a Google Map or something. Very, very accurate. And because they have a tremendous memory, then that's true. The elephant has a tremendous memory, very, very acute memory. But again, their mind is different.
Well, that's really interesting about the dolphins and the whales, that acoustically they hear and can tell what they're, that what, in other words, what the amount of information we get from our eyes sounds like they get that much information just acoustically, just in the sounds.
More and more scientists today are discovering that it's pretty much the truth. And, of course, we're just coming to a point where the power of our computers are able to do similar but not quite as perfect structures in terms of seeing structure. And, you know, not quite as good. But in fact, it is said that some of the whales actually can see the Pacific Basin using their very low acoustical signatures that they pulse out throughout the, you know, in front of them, and they actually can look like submarines, very, very long distances. Hmm. So they actually, you know, can see far away.
Yeah, much further away than we can see, because sound goes through water.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very well.
Very well.
Very noisy place, so they have a mind. Yeah, it's very noisy, right? You know, you've been underwater. Click, 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 crack, crack, beep, beep, all kinds of sounds under there. But they are able to distinguish that. So.
Well, that's really interesting. And this information that you have about this, about the brain of these different animals, where did this information come from? I mean, is this doesn't sound like National Geographic to me.
Well, no, kind of. It has a base. Its basis in a lot of our own science, but some of the inspiration part, the part that seems to differentiate our mind from the animal mind, even though as the animal mind is really can be really highly developed, much more than ours. Really, it comes down because of my interface with celestial beings. The most important interface that we possess is not our brain part, because it is limited in comparison to many of the celestials, including the Sharuns, whose brains are like twice the size of ours, at least that. They showed me that we are equivalent to them. We can be equivalent to them because of the ability to interface to the higher mind, the realm of the greater reality of our real family, our extended family beyond our... that's really what it comes down to. I was going to say citizenry, but it's more than that. It's much closer than that. When you share the higher mind, you share the same father.
Mm-hmm. You share the same father.
We share the same father. To put it simply, father of that higher mind, father of mine. And because of that, we are the same, even though maybe they have a better, it looks bigger, and some of them had conical heads. Mm-hmm. It's very, if you were to look at them, I did describe them before, their foreheads would be equivalent to the height, at least, of our entire face. It's very, very tall. And I might as well describe them again. I call them the elephant men because they had big, long ear lobes, like elephant has kind of big ears, a floppy ears sometimes, but the African elephant. But they also had they had this high forehead that, when you look at the elephant, the Indian elephant, and more the Indian elephant, with that high forehead that, comes up. Gave me the impression, as well as they had the breeding mask on, which had holes in the front of it, gave me the impression of, they look like elephants, but they're actually, they had their breeding mask on. Later, when they took their mask off and walked around, I guess because I was in the same environment with them, they went into another place and they took their mask off, and I could get a good look at their face. Their face was just like human. Their noses they had a Caucasian appearance. They looked Jewish, really. But these guys were not as powerful as the Shadow. Telepathically, were not as powerful. But I believe they had a lot more science. They had a lot more technology, more technically inclined. They were using a lot more technology, interfacing with a panel, which they read, I guess you might say, read into many things, I guess. But I wasn't on the side that they're looking at, just watching them read off the instrument which they needed to get information from. Anyway, just a little bit of review on what I remember.
Yeah, that's so fascinating to listen to, and we almost experience along with you, hear your interpretation.
Well, yeah, that's an important factor.
Very important. It's
I have right now an invite to participate, if you want, in mind sharing with the higher, with the celestials, if you want.
Oh, yes, that would be wonderful.
Okay. Let me ask them. 하루스나 하루 그런 돌에 시야하라군 따라서 숨쉬라게요. Yes, this is Ahlin Shurun. I was monitoring your conversation. I find it quite truthful and guided. I hope that I can share more light on your need to know. You may ask a question if you want.
Oh, thank you very much. And thank you for joining us. And thank you again for listening in. And your participation. And I just need to ask again, you are out near Saturn. Is that correct, Sharon?
Yes, we, the Saturns, are responsible for many of the activities of our interface with you, the human population on planet Earth. But we don't touch you physically. We try to touch you in a way that was previously described by Michael. Remotely.
I see. Well, recently we had this, we had these games start that we play here on Earth. They're called the Olympics. And they take place in London this year. And I noticed on our news forecast, one of our cameras, or many of the cameras, were pointing at the opening ceremony of these games. And they noticed that one of a celestial ship or two were in the photograph. That's how you. That was nice that you presented yourselves, or was that your ships that presented themselves to us at the opening ceremony?
You're correct. That is our craft, our ships, whatever you want to call them, that were there. There were several there, but you were only able to perhaps see maybe one or two. One purposely is for a softer interface with your reality. It was something that we chose so that it wouldn't be so obvious. It has a similar oval shape, but not necessarily an oval shape, but only from the perspective of the blimp. But we had other craft there. Perhaps you may have seen them or recorded them. It is quite fascinating. We perceive your joyous celebration as part of even our entertainment.
Yes, we find it entertaining to watch and participate in this human activity of running as fast as we can or swimming as fast as we can. And jumping over fences and things that we do here on Earth. I don't know how you... is there such a thing there out near Saturn? I know this is a silly question, but is there such a thing as games that you play out there?
Ah. Sadly, we don't necessarily have such games. It is wonderful to perceive it. We also noticed that there were many things that your people unite for. And to simply play such games to find out who is the best at it is wonderful, because it brings you together. In our place, our domain, we do have some games, but nothing like what you have done there. Nothing like your beautiful games.
Well, I'm glad you enjoy them as much as we do, possibly. But I just to change a little into a different question. I'd like to ask you that the people of Urantia, or the people of this planet Earth, we feel the other planets that orbit our sun, well, they are such a distance from us that we can't reach them. I mean, places we've never been physically. I mean, you have taken Michael and others out there, but the majority of us have not been there. We send craft to take pictures, but that's not the same. But here on this planet, we're taught science, or we call it science. It's our science classes, and they teach us about these planets. But to me, I just wonder how true our science really is, and I find it lacking in many ways. But could you tell us that if there are people on any of our planets in our vast solar system, or we think it's of a vast solar system, and could you tell us about other life beyond our own life here on this planet, let's say on Mars or Jupiter, or, well, you're out near Saturn, or even Venus, or other planets. Is there life on these other planets? That's my question.
Do you refer to biologic life?
Yes, biologic life, like people like us.
I see. There are none. People like we, who are celestial, many. Oh, of course, many. We have outposts all over.
All over our solar system?
All over your galaxy, my goodness.
All over your galaxy. Do you have a base on our moon?
Yes.
That you're watching us very closely?
Oh, I would not say that we are watching you from that base. It serves another purpose, a receiving station.
Is that on the side of the moon that we can see, or is that on the side of the moon that we can't see?
Well, it is the moon.
Oh, it's... are you saying you're inside the moon?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. I see. And...
it's small.
It's small?
Small.
Compared to the architectural world, as the Urantia book calls, your sphere near Saturn?
Yes. Its structure is old, but it's been supplanted by the New Jerusalem.
And the New Jerusalem, would you say, is larger or smaller than our moon?
Oh, as far as your... I know what you want. As far as if you were to say our structures, the New Jerusalem is far larger.
Far larger, wow.
Yes, but in terms of it in comparison to the moon is larger.
I see. Well, it seems that our moon has been placed in a precise orbit around our planet, and it rotates at a very precise rotation speed. And this allows us only to see one side of our moon, and it never allows us to see the other side of our moon. And maybe you've heard me speak about this before, but can you tell us about that, why the moon was set that way, and who set the moon to rotate at that speed so we can never see the other side?
Such a manner of rotation is really a matter of how the moon was formed. Because it formed from an accretion of material, both impacted from the planet Earth and that which was originally accreted, the moon itself would take the natural plane of structure and accretion in its forming. And in its forming, it would become a one-sided structure, essentially, like you say, only showing one face. This is a normal accretion process.
A normal accretion process for our moon?
For many planets.
I see. Many planets rotate at that speed and orbit at the same speed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a natural thing that occurs?
Natural meaning that always follow the same path. Or natural meaning in terms of various interactions which cause evolutionary changes in order that it would become. Not all planets, planetoids, moons as such, form without interaction. The moon has had no especially strong interaction to cause its rotation to be out of kilter or synchronization or rotation from its original accretion. But if a large body would tug at it could change its rotation. But it has not happened. The purpose of the moon being one in which helps your planet to remain alive.
Could you tell us more about that? How our moon keeps our planet alive? It's science that we don't get on this planet, and it's nice for you to tell us, the listeners and myself are very much appreciative for you to come on and speak with us through Michael.
We, the Sharuns, are not the scientists, as you would say, those who study the interactions of material worlds, structures. There are many other functional beings with us who have and know and work with us over long periods of time to bring about understanding or mechanisms in place that keep your planet alive. First, let me regress. Instead of a live planet, let's look at a dead one. A dead one would be your planet Mars. A little smaller, but very similar. You know that planet?
Yes, I do. I know Mars.
Does it look alive to you?
From my distance, I'm so far away from it to really look close. We've sent spacecraft there to take pictures back, or send pictures back, and what I see from those photographs, it doesn't look alive to me.
Yes. Does it have a moon? Like yours?
No.
Do you think it has something to do with it being dead?
I never put the two together that because Mars doesn't have a moon, that Mars is not alive with like so much water like we have.
Water is good, but there is other interactions that work inside of the very core of your planet. Don't you understand that your planet is alive because of a motor?
A motor?
A motor. A generator. Deep inside your planet. Magnetic field it does generate.
So you're saying our planet has a motor that generates energy like electricity?
Yes. And a simple magnetic field dipole.
North,
south. Yes. Engine pushing, pulling, churning up internal structure of planet, causing movement, causing magnetic field, shielding you from the blast of the sun. Simple, yeah?
Yes. Yes, simple, but so important. And sometimes unless we're told to look at these simple things, we don't really realize they're there.
I'm sorry. I do not mean to make you feel inferior. I hope to talk to you like I would talk to anyone curious.
Well, I'm sorry. I am curious.
Well, I try to keep it simple. Can you understand? I do not need to go beyond into the details because your own science will understand.
Well, it seems our own science leaves out the important things that would really give us a true, pure education. We seem to get a watered-down education that they only want to have us learn certain things. They call it a public education, an education for the masses.
Don't worry. I share the mind of Michael. From it, I gather this much. It is cost, books, things like that, but they will change. Yes, they will change. Your technology moves faster. Cost will not be as much of a constraining force in the expansion of knowledge.
And this alive planet that we have that you said our moon is the motor?
No.
No.
Part of it.
Oh, I see. So is the other part within our planet?
Yes.
I see. Well, we have an event coming up in 2 days that we call a full moon. It may sound like a simple little thing to you, but to us, it's a big deal that we can see the entire moon, that the sun is totally on the other side of us, lighting up the moon. And there's many people on this planet that love the moon and worship the moon. Is the moon something we should feel that way about?
No. You should study it, understand it. Those who studied it, understand it, date back to your most old forms of your humanity. I believe called Paleolithic, as well as Neolithic man. Stone Age man studied it quite a lot. If you study it, you will gain understanding of the motor mechanism. You would notice that tidal variations, as well as movements of magnetic fields, subtle as they may be, are involved in keeping life force moving on your planet. Our responsibility is not to enlighten you of your basic physical environment, but to enlighten you of your greater reality. The very mechanism by which I speak to you. This is you, your gift. Open yourself to it and receive it.
Well, we are thankful that you are speaking with us, and this is why we're all listening with everything you say to us, because we learn through teaching, and this is how we find out, no matter what age we are, whether we're very young or we are have been on this planet a long time, which we think is old. But do you feel that we are old, or do you feel that we are still young?
Oh, in terms of the age of who we are, yes, you're young, very young.
And how would you describe our life here on this planet? Here, I mean, here we are here, and we know about life here. But how would you describe our life here on this planet?
When you say life, the classification of your planet is one of development, experimentation, unification, dissolution, many of the things moving forward are very interesting. They occur nowhere else. Your movement in development is very different. And your Olympic Games is a unique thing.
And when your ships came to the Olympic Games to be seen by millions of people, is this your way of showing everyone on this planet that you really are here, even though many people want to believe that you do not exist? Many people here want to believe, and they feel very comfortable in believing, that they are the only living thing in the universe. Do your celestial friends think that's kind of funny that we think we are the only ones?
Ignorant is funny?
Yes, ignorant is funny.
Oh, then it is funny. So, we also understood what you're saying. That is why we presented more than just one craft. In fact, there were three. But you mostly filmed one. There, that one was meant to be debated among the very ones you spoke of, the belief ones who want to believe and the ones who don't. Because with that is the activity of life, the energy of life. You know, when I said the moon is very important to keep your planet alive, so the difference of opinion and perspective is also. It brings about uniqueness and greater realities and understandings. The expansion of reality is made in the churning of life and thought.
Well, I want to thank you for sending your ship to us to give us a true reality that we are not alone. And I want to thank you personally for sending your ship because, well, Michael and I and many people know we're not alone, but it's the other people that need to see for themselves and have something to think about. And I want to thank you for sending your ship to be seen during our games when millions of people would be watching. That was very clever of you to send it at that time. Thank you.
Oh, you may say we sent it at that time. It is an entertainment for us. You wanted to know how we look at you. Sometimes you're very entertaining.
Yes, I imagine it's very entertaining. It's do you find what we do sometimes very sad?
Oh, yes. We know that it is because of a terrible deception. And it is because of that that some of those things happen.
Yes, well, it is sad what humans on this planet do to other people. And all of us want to have a nice, comfortable life on this planet, and electricity is so important to all of us. Right now, in a country called India, they're having a big problem with electricity. There's millions, 600 million was the number I heard, that they're without electricity. And when you said our Earth was alive with electricity, this is something that some people on this planet were able to capture that electricity?
Yes, of course. Channel it and use it according to your need in modern civilization. You call modern civilization. You will have to learn.
I will have to learn?
Yes. That there is other ways. But for now, see what will happen.
Thank you. Thank you for that encouragement. To know something will be happening. in our future, in a of days, we call them days. Do you think of them as days when time goes by?
Measures of time, yes, they could call them days. These who pass timelessly are the eternal sons, the ancient ones. But you accomplish so much. You accomplish so much. You're more than entertaining.
Well, that's very nice to hear that we're more than entertaining. We try to advance our lives technologically. But I wanted to ask about electricity. Is that something you use where you are? Do you use electricity?
In the methods in which you use them, not as much. You might say you are using a stick of dynamite to do the job that can be done with a match. That is the level of efficiency you are working with now.
Are you referring to making electricity with nuclear power? Or we call it nuclear power, but it's actually splitting the atom?
Ah, this is not the splitting of the atom. Is the energetics of the decay.
Yes, that's what I should have said.
I want you to understand again, it is not the generation of it, it's the use of it. The end use you use a stick of dynamite. That much energy to do the job that can be done with a little match.
Well,
if you were to use it efficiently, you would find that the energies required would be very, very much less than what you have and use right now.
Well, I would like to see us get this kind of energy naturally from the earth, get our natural electricity from the earth.
There you go again. Electricity. You keep talking about electricity. You have already come to a point of understanding the basis of matter and energy. Just know this much, that if you could make energy from what is not energy, in its state, which is neither energy nor matter, what would this world be like, which flows in a sea of this non-existent energy, non-existent matter, that can be called forth in either form, if you understand?
Yes, I understand. I would like to be taught how to capture this energy that you talk about.
Ah. You are not the capturer of it. you are the user of it. Adjust the end in which you use this energy, and it is there, flowing energy.
What do you mean when you say adjust the end use of your of this energy?
Right now, you are using electricity as a primary motive energy force.
Yes.
And, but you know that energy such as electricity can be static, stored, or mobile, depending upon its potential, right?
Yes.
Potential pressure, voltage. You remember your simple physics?
Yes.
Is it any different than any other physics? No. But you're working still with transferring of pressures. What if the pressures that you require would not necessarily be from an external source, but created at the point of use?
So you're saying that it would be better for us to create this energy right where it needs to be used.
Yes. And only that which is necessary to propel it, to transform it, would be within that containment.
And our moon has a big play in this development of this energy for our planet?
Oh, no. No, no, no. Not at all. This energy, which choice it is throughout. It is neither energy nor matter. Do you want to call it spirit? Perhaps.
Yes, we could call it spirit, but we know it as electricity.
No.
Made with magnets or made with...
You're incorrect. But correct. You want to know about how to power your planet and insist upon the motive of the electron.
Well,
that is only one. Again, at the point of use, transform both matter and energy. Or create or transition to what you need. Presently, you are at a point of use that will give you the understanding of how to do it.
Yes, I feel we are very close. We have these things on this planet, we call them automobiles. We get around on the surface with them, with wheels on a solid surface. And these automobiles use energy that we have to stop it and constantly put this liquid from our Earth into the car. That it would be wonderful for people of Earth not to breathe what comes out of the exhaust pipe.
You already have the technologies that can change it. Again, the electron and the electromotive force. But it isn't only that.
I suppose you're aware that I am aware of another way of collecting this energy from the Earth. And would you say that we being the few, are on the right path?
There's too much of my mind that is interfacing right now. Disconnect. So it wouldn't be pure. But anyway, what was that again? Michael back in the world. Here.
Michael back?
Yeah, well, yeah, I was listening on the side, but then I started interjecting, wondering, looking at your ideas. But anyway, I think seems like we're being pointed toward another form of usage of energy. I think we gotta sort of like gradually transition.
Yes.
Yeah. But he wasn't talking about a gradual transition, he was talking about a completely different way, you know. Yeah.
Yes, I'll have to listen to this again as a listener instead of on the edge of my seat speaking. This was Sharon again?
It was one of the Sharon's. Yeah, forgot his name already. He has another name besides this title, the Sharon.
I say, well, wow, Michael, that is, it just blows me away to be such a, to be connected to such a, well, not a, he's not a spiritual being, is that correct?
No, he's not. He's a higher order being, but he is a material being, yes. Actually, really exists as people, you know.
Yes. Well, it's amazing what he said about the moon, and it's this whole thing is just amazing.
Well, it's pretty much a simple description of. Yeah, it's like comparison between the purpose of the moon and the one without it. Just look at Mars, didn't have a moon. You know, not like ours, anyway. You know, if you want to call little things orbiting it. But, you know, it's...
Wow.
I guess he was talking about... There's other things about... You know, when it came down to the churn, he used the word churn. I don't know if he got it from my mind, but actually churn is used in the concept of, I believe it was Hindu creation, I think. Hindu creationism. Yeah. And I think I was at Thailand? At the Bangkok, well, the airport. And they have this tug of war creating a churn that created all of reality. You know.
Wow.
And I think, I don't know. There must be more in that general picture of them trying to explain to the human beings at the time. I believe It encompassed a lot of information that could only be pulled out to the concept of a tug of war and creating the churn. But wow. we definitely have a tug of war with the moon. That's for fact. Our planet and the moon. As a generator of the magnetic field, I think it might have a lot of truth in that.
Yes, I was interested in the type of power they use, or he thought electricity was just a simple thing that we use as an end product.
Well, he was talking about it as sort of like, you know, pressure differences. Mm-hmm. We use pressure differences a lot. Always. You have to work with pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. And essentially we have a spiritual pressure too. And that pressure pushes us toward divinity attainment. Yeah. So.
Well, thank you, Michael. This has been another enlightening hour. We're over our hour further than we've ever gone, but that's okay.
Okay.
That doesn't matter. I'm just trying to have some uniform thing here. But that was wonderful to go with the flow.
Okay, fine. So, aloha, and have a nice day.
You too. Have a good day, and aloha to you, Michael. So long.